And there's this, as we can hear and we know, that there's just no right way to be a parent. It's like, how are we? How are the kids? How is the match of temperaments? And it's just, and then that changes, 'cause sort of get it figured out, and then they grow and it changes. And just being able to stay reasonably fluid and steady in that all changing, and our friends do it differently, and just in the mix of all that, and that really finding that still point that we can rest in of like, well, this is what's true for me. These are the values that are important to me. And this is what I'm needing as a parent and as a human, and then what am I trying to model? Because I feel like that for me has really become so paramount in our work together here. Of like, well, what am I actually modeling? I can talk really well about it, but what's actually happening? And what's really important? What's being conveyed underneath the words or in the silences? Speaking of silences, how about if we close your eyes? Just allow yourself to find a posture that allows you to feel alert and grounded. And imagine that we are taking our seats as sons and daughters of the Buddha, sitting halfway between heaven and earth. I want to offer something a little bit different tonight, as the topic is going to be concentration. So spot on in terms of the steadiness, which is really what concentration is asking of us, to kind of hold a sense of steadiness. And there are a number of different concentration practices. And for tonight, for the first part of our sit, maybe half, I want to use the metaphrases as a concentration practice. And the metta, which is the Pali word for loving kindness, is one of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes, one of four, the four being loving kindness, sympathetic joy, compassion, and equanimity. And each of the divine abodes have their own phrases and ways of working with them, but metta tends to be the first one that we can work with. And it's really offering a sense of friendliness to ourselves and to others. It's a protection practice, and there's a whole story about how the metta practice came into the practice, but that it is also a concentration practice because it gives the mind something to focus on. That with a concentration, it's an invitation for a one-pointedness, that we just rest our attention on an object, and that the object in this exercise are the phrases. If this is something you don't want to do, just take care of yourself and feel free to just do mindfulness of the breath. But I'll walk through the metta practice together, but with a slightly different quality, in that the invitation is to really see if you can rest your attention on the phrases. The mind will do what it does and tell stories and replay things or plan out or make shopping lists or think about your Halloween costume, whatever it's going to do. That in the saying of the phrases, to kind of keep bringing the mind back. And that's sort of with a puppy like sit, stay. So to start with a metta phrase, if you call to mind someone that's easy for you to love, it may be someone you don't know personally, like a teacher, like, Sister Teresa or the Dalai Lama or Pope Francis, whomever, just someone when you imagine sitting in front of, your heart fills and you feel glad. That it's not a complicated relationship. It could be your dog or cat. If you call someone to mind who fits this description, it could be a mentor or a teacher, and imagine sitting in front of this person. And to offer them the phrases, may you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. You may have your own phrases that you use for this practice. By all means, use the phrases that have some resonance with you. And sometimes the practice can feel so dry, there's no resonance. And that's fine too. And here's when it's really helpful as a concentration practice, to let your mind really focus on these phrases of, may I be happy? Or may, again, sitting in front of this person, may you be happy? May you be peaceful? May you be healthy? May you be free. Just finding your own rhythm in saying the phrases, it can be helpful to have the last word kind of have a echo quality to it. May you be free. The visualization that can come with it is kind of the ripple in a pond. And having these phrases be the focus of your attention. You start to drift into story, then you kind of corral the mind back. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. And your mind might be jumping all around, and that's fine. It's just to notice it and see if you can raise your own energy level up enough to kind of, again, corral the focus to stay on these phrases. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. And perhaps to bow to the person you've been sitting across from. Let that person go, and then just as you wish that person well, then can you wish yourself well, offering yourself these same phrases. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy. May I be free. Again, as much as possible, letting the mind stay steady on these phrases. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy. May I be free. Again, if your attention gets kind of scattered or diffused, just see in a playful way if you can kind of bring it back to these phrases of well-wishing for yourself. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be healthy. May I be free. And then in keeping your eyes closed, if you can picture our group in a circle. Well, you may know people you've just met a couple weeks ago. They're just holding us in a circle, and to wish each one of us, offer these phrases, may you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. And to imagine this rippling of well wishes connecting and touching each of us. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. And to imagine inviting in your child or your kids into the circle and picturing them. And you might want to picture them asleep. If they're standing before you, or you're watching them sleep, or they're sitting down with them, and just to imagine looking, taking in this beautiful face of your child and of your children, and to wish them well. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. Imagine that you're showering your child or your children with these well wishes. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. And if you will, to imagine that this ever-widening circle, that all of us have our kids in the circle. And extending the well wishes to this larger circle. The parents and kids of this class, may you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. To imagine we pull in the kids from downstairs. Some of you are related to them, some of us are not. But to imagine those kids too are in this circle, and the beauty of our own hearts and minds to wish these kids well. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. Pull the teachers in downstairs and the support staff in. And if you can imagine this ever-widening circle of those people working the land, the people up on the hill sitting retreat. The circle may have gotten unwieldy, so whatever visualization can work, that these well wishes can touch the people on this land. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. That the blessings that radiate from the circle also include those beings that can fly and slither and hop and walk upon this land. May all beings on the land be happy. May all beings on this land be peaceful. May all beings on this land be healthy. And free. And to imagine the power of this collective well-wishing that starts here in this room and radiates out into the four directions, touching parents and kids and grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins. And that these waves ripple out to the north and to the east, to the south and to the west. Touching the kids that don't have parents. Touching the parents who've lost their kids. But this bestowing of loving kindness knows no limits and can touch all beings, those living in peace, those living in war. And it can cross oceans and mountains and continents. And perhaps even just keying in on the kids of this world, some of whom are struggling so mightily. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be healthy. May you be free. May children everywhere be happy and peaceful, healthy and free. And may all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free. So if you close your eyes for a minute and picture yourself painting, organizing your books, being with your dog, or trail running in the ocean, snuggled by the fire, reading, to let yourself drop in to that experience. And that gladdening of the heart that can come. That in many ways, this is concentration. That the way that concentration is taught, it's in the arc of the pillars, the first pillar being dana, the generosity, the second longer pillar as it reaches into the deeper part of the river is the ethical conducts, living in harmony, that can be very rich, and there's a lot there. And the third pillar that takes us across is that the Pali word is bhavana. And the bhavana is broken into two pieces, one being concentration and one is mindfulness. And I've spent the week really trying to tease out, like, what actually is the difference? And there's no shortage of things written about how they differ. And really what I came to, and what I so much appreciate, a quote from Ajahn Chah, Jack's teacher, and I'm just saying, at the end of the day, there's no difference. Because in order to have mindfulness, you need to be able to concentrate. And that when the teachings of concentration by themselves don't necessarily promote wisdom or insight, that we can just get really focused, we can focus on, you know, I went to law school, I could focus on whatever it was I didn't like, just focus on just reading, or you can focus on your golf game, or but I didn't necessarily make me wise. But with these teachings, it's really that's sort of the two wings of this practice are compassion and wisdom. And we want to bring both of those into whatever the practices are, the practices of meditation, be it strict concentration practice or mindfulness. And next week we'll talk about mindfulness. And that's certainly the buzzword, and you get mindful of everything these days, which is beautiful. And it's connected to it's connected. It's not just something that's plucked out. With concentration, I think it's fair. We have two, maybe concentration retreats, where it's really about deepening one's ability to really have that one pointed attention and drop into an absorbed state. And then there's these five different levels of concentration, which I wrote about on the outline. But I think it's so relevant for us as parents, given the distractibility of our world and what happens to our kids. And I don't know if it's ironic or just a sad commentary on where I am, but in my excitement of typing stuff up, I had like 6 or 7 pages of notes, which are at home, which is why I'm turning to my phone, because I wanted to read this bit from an article from KQED about Daniel Goleman talking about kids and phones and distractibility. Right? So he says, the circuitry for paying attention is identical for the circuits for managing distressing emotion. The area of the brain that governs focus and executive functioning is known as the prefrontal cortex. This is also the part of the brain that allows people to control themselves, to keep emotions in check, and to feel empathy for other people. The attentional circuitry needs to have the experience of sustained episodes of concentration, reading the text, understanding and listening to what the teacher is saying, in order to build the mental models that create someone who is well-educated. He continues, the pullaways from this mean that we have to become more intentional about teaching kids. He advocates digital Sabbath every day, sometime where kids aren't being distracted by devices at all. And then he goes on. But that idea that, and there's also a movie, has anybody seen the movie Screenagers? Screenagers? Yes? Good? So much screen time. Good. And it's, on average, I think it's not just our kids, but all of us have an average of 6.5 hours of screen time a day. And I think I said this in the beginning, but as of 2012, there's a British study about adults' attention spans, and our attention span is 8 seconds. A goldfish has 10. And we used to have more. We're going down. I never really thought of goldfishes like having long attention spans. But certainly as I've been paying attention to this in the last week, really looking at how do I interact with this phone? It's funny to have it up here. But really working on, okay, do I need to check it at the stoplight? No, I don't. But the way that there is the chemical kick that we get from the phone, and it's so much stronger in our kids. And there's another quote that I have. That really just points to how vulnerable our kids' brains are to getting hooked in. And there was a line in the trailer for the Screenagers about the kid, a teenager, saying, like, I can't pay attention. Like, I'm on my phone all the time. I can't pay attention to my teacher. Like, I'm just not even there. They're on their phones when they're in the classroom. And how, particularly with kids, it's really problematic because of how the brains are wiring up. And the ability to not be able to sustain attention, separate from ADD and ADHD, but just, I notice it in myself, the distractibility that is scattered. I can feel really scattered, phone-related or not. But what I so love about the concentration practice is that it's this really beautiful invitation to bring unification to the mind. And by focusing on one thing, the invitation is to be able to have the sense of a unified, not scattered, mind, and that in the the different factors. The first one is vitaka, and it's talks about aiming, sort of choosing the object, like the object of the metaphrases or the object of the breath. I've been doing this week of just pinching two fingers and having that be a focal point, and just seeing like, well, even just in between clients, if I have, you know, 5 minutes to take three and just focus here, it's nice. It's not, it's, you know, just, okay, I'm going to take a couple of minutes and just focus all my attention here as a way of corralling the mind to just steady, and can, that does open up into a sense of calm and steadiness. But the first one is just that aiming or connecting or directing of attention. And the second one, the vikara, is the sustaining of attention. And you need both. That you can aim it, but you also need to have the support and enough energy to be able to sustain the attention resting there. And that of these five levels, the first two, the aiming, and the second, the sustaining, are the only ones that we can control. The other three that come are this piti, which is a sense of joy, which when you think about organizing your books or swimming in the ocean, that joy can come because we're pretty unified. Like we're just really focused on the one thing that we're doing. And we can still take in the world. Like I was riding with my brother over the weekend and we were coming down a hill really fast and I was pretty focused and a little bit scared. But I could also take things in. But I was really focused for the, if I fall, I'll really be in trouble. But just being able to have that unified state of mind and then the real openness that can come. And that the teachings here are that is actually the mind we're born with. That this ability to have the sustained, concentrated, the steadiness that Clay spoke of, that real ability to be fully present. Because the piti, that joy, is really describing, well, what happens when we're fully present? It's nice. Like our mind is quiet. We're not scanning, we're not scattered, we're not all here. But if we can have that real sense of presence, when you say love teaching, like, okay, you're really all in. All senses are kind of focused and geared in. Then there's an aliveness, and we're present. And that's kind of the whole game, right there, sort of in offering our kids our presence. They might say they want all kinds of things, but when we're actually really present with them, or they're actually present with us, it's a really beautiful, precious gift. After that delight or the joy, the pitta, that comes sukha, which is a kind of a sustained happiness. And again, it's sort of they build on each other of the steadier we can become, we just settle into it. Like, oh, this is nice, this calm, contented place. And the last one, ekatata, the unification of the mind. There are no other distractions. And a lot of the teachings, one of the teachings just talks about the hindrances of what gets in the way of our being able to be collected or have our mind be unified or what allows us to be scattered. And the five hindrances are that sense of clinging, of wanting, I want this, I want things to be a certain way, a real leaning out and grabbing, and it's sister of aversion, pushing away. I don't like this, I don't want that, I don't like this. Pushing. So kind of controlling it, like I do like this, I like that, it's too hot, it's too cold. That kind of chattery way of like, if I can just get the perfect temperature, or wanting to control things in a certain way. That those are really just hindrances of the mind. That way that we can get distracted. Like, well, if I just put all my energy into like wanting to create this, well, I'm going to get it and I'm going to be disappointed because it actually wasn't authentically true. But playing with those as hindrances. Restlessness and sloth and torpor are the other sort of twins one, that the mind's really busy. There's anxiousness or restlessness in the mind. That too is a hindrance, and just being able to drop below it. Like there's all this energy up here. Okay. And then come down and be able to rest. And the sloth and torpor, sort of the Victorian words for just when the mind, you're like spacey and checked out and really foggy. And you can bring the energy up to kind of pierce through that. But that too is kind of it's a funny word, but like a defilement of the mind, like it's not true. It's just a way that we can get spacey because we don't want to deal with something, or for whatever reason that sloth can come in, that fatigue or tiredness. And the last one of the hindrances is doubt. Like, what am I doing? This is a waste of time. I should be doing something else. And all the different ways that doubt or doubting ourselves as parents can come in. It's kind of a long way around, but just that there's the hindrances and then these practices of concentration. And when you get to a really concentrated place, these guys, these hindrances, there's no room. The mind is really clear. This quote on the page of concentration is like a pure empty bowl. Wisdom and understanding are the food that fills the bowl and nourishes the heart. I wanted to share this bit from Pema Chogren's Places That Scare You. She's talking about concentration practice, and she says the pith instruction is stay. Stay. Just stay. Learning to stay with ourselves in meditation is like training a dog. If we train a dog by beating it, we'll end up with an obedient but very inflexible and rather terrified dog. The dog may obey when we say stay, come, roll over, sit, but he will also be neurotic and confused. By contrast, training with kindness results in someone who is flexible and confident, who doesn't become upset when situations are unpredictable and insecure. So whenever we wander off, we gently encourage ourselves to stay and settle down. Are we experiencing restlessness? Stay. Discursive mind? Stay. Are fear and loathing out of control? Stay. Aching knees, throbbing back? Stay. What's for lunch? Stay. What am I doing here? Stay. I can't stand this another minute. Stay. But this is how we cultivate steadfastness. But these are the things the mind does. Stay. Stay with it. And I have a puppy. The puppy doesn't stay at all. So it's a big mess. And from the Dhammapada. The restless, agitated mind, hard to protect, hard to control. The sage makes straight as a fletcher the shaft of an arrow. Like a fish out of water thrown on dry ground, this mind thrashes about, trying to escape Mara's command. The mind, hard to control, flighty, alighting where it wishes, one does well to tame. The disciplined mind brings happiness. So if you'll close your eyes, we'll do an exercise and then open it up. Quick, would you mind just turning the volume down back there? Next to the light switch is a dial. We'll see if it works. How's that? Is that better? That's better. Is that off? It's off. Is that maybe turn it up a little bit. How's that? Did it go off? It's off. Oh. Okay, how's that? Good. On, off. A little bit. A little bit up, a little bit up. Is that good? Let's try that. Am I on enough? Yeah. All right, good. A little bit? Okay. All right, good. Thank you. Thank you. Really concentrate. Check, check, check. All right. Close your eyes. And I know I talked a lot, so just invite you in whatever way to kind of set all that aside. And just for a couple of minutes, I want to invite you, if you pick an object of attention, it could be the breath as you notice it, like in your left nostril, or your breath as you feel it in your rising of your chest, or your hand resting on your sweater, or your hand in your hand. So the invitation is to find something pretty specific. One thing that you want to choose as your object to direct your attention. Just kind of picking something that will work well enough just for a couple minutes. And just allow your attention to rest on this object. That concentration can have this quality of like furrowing of the brow and working in, like back when we were in school, of like, you gotta concentrate, or telling our kids, focus. And that's not this. That we want it to be like a more of a relaxed attention, but with some energy and some juice, that it's directed to one thing. Again, might be your hand resting in your hand, or a specific facet of the breath. And the phrase sort of aiming and sustaining the attention on this one point. You kind of pick the point and then stay. Mind to wander off, come back, stay. And just to experiment with this. In as much as possible to collect and gather the energies of the mind and direct them on this one thing. And then I'm going to invite you to leave that object, to put it down, as it were, and to allow yourself to travel to that activity, perhaps the one that you mentioned earlier, or another activity that you love. That when you're hiking in the woods or running on the trails or swimming in the pool, surfing. Whatever activity, when you're involved in it, you feel alive and you love it. You feel good. And in as much as you can, in as much detail, allow yourself to drop in. If you're walking in the woods, is it a sunny, warm day and you're happy for the shelter of the trees? Is it a gray, drizzly, cozy day? Just to open up the sense doors, as you will, of the sights and the sounds and the feel, the taste of the air, the smells that you notice if you're in the pool or the ocean or by the fire. The feel of the books in your hand. Whatever the activity is, to allow yourself in this imagining to drop in as fully as you can. Yeah. No, it's so hard that, like, I gotta go. I gotta be somewhere. And I was driving carpool this morning and was sitting in traffic and looking up in the driveway, and there was this little boy, maybe three, and he had a piece of paper. And then Dad was in a suit, like, give me the piece of paper. And the boy was just running all around. And the mom was kind of in the car, like, hurry up. And the dad's like, give me the piece of paper. And totally feeling like he wanted to, like the boy had an envelope or like it was clearly some kind of document that the dad in his suit document. He's like, give it to me. And the boy was, it was full empathy for the dad, like, oh, that hurt so much. And so hilarious to me in the car watching it, like, oh, but I feel your pain, but oh my God, because the boy was just like zipping and he knew that guy had to go to work, so he was not surfing. He was not enjoying it at all. Blessings to him. It's caught in that book that I think I mentioned, The First Night of the Spiritual Child, Lisa Miller's book, really talks about the adolescence. It's really that place where they're seeking some kind of transcendent experience. Like, please tell me there's more to life than just this. Like, how do I connect into that next plane? And if we can help them make that connection to something bigger than themselves, it's tremendously useful in helping them channel, because they're going to get it one way or another, that connection, and to help support them in getting healthy connections. I'm going to close with a poem from the parents' Tao Te Ching called The Still Point. A wheel spins in a circle. The still point at the center gives it direction. Be still, and your children will see the way ahead. A pot has beautiful sides. The emptiness inside makes it useful. Empty yourself of agenda, and you will be available for your children. A good house has strong walls. The space within the walls makes it a home. Create space within your heart, and your children will always rest secure. So thanks for coming. Next week, remarkably, is our last week. The homework is just to think about noticing when during the week you find yourself in a concentrated place. What supports that? What interrupts it? And then to see if you can see it in your kids, if you see them in a place that they're really kind of in that flow, really wanting to dance, or just sort of noting and just sort of track it with their kids. So have a great week. Happy Halloween, my gosh.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.